Hello and welcome to another episode of Hanks a Lot, the comprehensive and encyclopedic podcast examining chronologically the many films of Mr. Tom Hanks. I'm your host, Kent Shelton, and joining me this week from Hollywood, California is our resident film critic, our film critic at large, Mr. Trace Oakley, and from Seattle, Washington, our musical director, and the only man that L7 ever said was too square to be in the band, Mr. Kevin Dennis. How you doing, guys?
I'm great.
You know, one of these weeks, I'm going to get what the hell you're talking about when you reference whatever introducing Kevin.
I usually reference something Seattle specific, or at least grunge adjacent, because that was the last great contribution that Seattle made to the musical world. Although, you know, they did give us a, as we mentioned Sir Mix-a-Lot. They gave us Perry Como. They gave us Muzak, elevator music.
Yeah.
And they gave us Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix was a Seattle guy. So, there's a lot more to mine in my introductions for our musical director. hey, everybody. I know that our listeners out there, it's seamless. Just every Saturday morning, there's an episode. But what you don't understand is that we sometimes we record three in a week, and sometimes we go months and months without recording, and then we drop back into. So, a little inside baseball for you guys. Everything recorded before this was pre-pandemic, and now this is like 2 years later, and it's after the pandemic. No, I'm kidding. We took like a week off.
Sometimes we record, you know, three episodes in one day, then we have dinner and drinks, and then we record two more. And if Paul Lynde were still alive, he would be really plowed for those last two.
Oh, y'all bet, yeah. Oh, the Friday episodes we record. Boy, Gene Rayburn gets a little mixed up with his cue cards.
I find it easier just to drink during the show. I think that's much easier.
That was Paul Lynde's drink, but before, during, and after, and then at home crying at night.
I'll save those privates.
Thank you for getting us back on track, Trace. This week's movie is a wartime epic known as Saving Private Ryan, which came out the same year. I know it may be confusing for people. It came out the same year as a movie called Saving Ryan's Privates, but that was direct
to different video. Audience.
Direct audience. To video, and yeah. And I'm not joking. There was a movie that year called Shaving Ryan's Privates.
Interestingly enough, same cast.
Yeah.
It's the same cast. I think our listeners had a drinking bet on how long it would take one of us to reference that.
It was the same cast, except that Adam Goldberg dropped out. So he was the only one who wouldn't be involved.
Most of our jokes are for four people in our audience, just by the way.
Yes. Yes. So you guys can turn off the show now. We're done. We're done with the jokes for the four of you. Now we need to talk to the public at large. This movie takes place in World War II, starting on D-Day. It starts, I shouldn't say it starts on D-Day, because it starts in present time with a framing device that shows an old codger going to look at some tombstones in France. But then it becomes an extended flashback beginning on D-Day on a landing ship on its way to Omaha Beach. I'm going to set the stage here and let Trace give us a review of the movie Saving Private Ryan, a Steven Spielberg film starring Tom Hanks. Trace, after this song, take it away.
Well, now it's time for the review. Trace, please tell us, what is your view?
Any war movie that isn't decisively an anti-war movie is a piece of crap. 1998 Saving Private Ryan is skillfully made, with great cinematography, impeccable attention to period detail, stunning special effects, top-notch work in every area of its design, and effective performances by its large cast. It spends a good deal of its nearly three-hour running time showing us in bloody detail the horrors of war. It generally approximates an anti-war film. The main body of the film is framed a la A League of Their Own by a maudlin sequence set in the present where an aged Private Ryan visits Normandy Cemetery and tearfully stands at the grave of Captain John Miller. He speaks of Miller's bravery and sacrifice, and we see a faded and tattered American flag, and we're given a lesson on what a hero is. Saving Private Ryan hedges its way out of squarely anti-war sentiment here and there, and its dialogue is almost 100% hollow macho posturing. So, is it 90% an anti-war film? After all, it is generally loathed by conservatives. 80%? 70%? Regardless of how much time it spends doing so, Saving Private Ryan makes a concerted effort to please those who see war in a positive light, those who excuse the atrocities, those who view anti-war demonstrators as traitors, those who admit war is hell, but look how it brings out the best in us. Even if Saving Private Ryan gave just 1% of its running time and budget to said war apologists, the film would be what it is, a piece of crap. Yes, Steven Spielberg single-handedly saved the motion picture industry by making movies about Indiana Jones and E.T. There wouldn't still be movies without Spielberg, right? So his foray into serious filmmaker must be respected, right? As for the plot, World War II is going on and a private named Ryan is ordered rescued because his brothers were killed and his mom shouldn't lose all of their sons. Many obstacles ensue. 17,000 squibs were used in the Omaha Beach sequence toward the beginning of the film. How many squib experts were needed to attach, adjust, and clean up the mess of 17,000 squibs? How many minds were changed by Saving Private Ryan regarding the need for combat that blows up chests, shatters limbs, and ends lives? Actual amputee stuntmen were used to approximate the blowing off of limbs. Prosthetic arms and legs were attached, then spectacularly exploded off. Did this make a difference in how we view war? Could the $70 million budget of Saving Private Ryan have made a difference used some other way toward the greater good? I like to think so, if not managed by a corporate entity such as Steven Spielberg, Paramount, or DreamWorks. The performances are solid. Tom Hanks, Edward Burns, Tom Sizemore, Harv Presnell, and Matt Damon, among others, do effective work. They embody their characters through the challenging physicality of the film and acquit themselves admirably, spouting the inane, canned military man-speak that makes up nearly all of the film's dialogue. When you really want an audience to lose itself in a harrowing story, who should you cast in a central role amid the carnage? Hint, it doesn't rhyme with Ted Danson. In the Don't Blink or You'll Miss It department, Gus Grissom has a cameo as a donut dolly. The late great writer, philosopher, and war veteran Howard Zinn wrote much more eloquently than I about this movie. He said, "Vietnam caused large numbers of Americans to question the enterprise of war itself. Now, Saving Private Ryan, aided by superb cinematic technology, draws on our deep feeling for the GIs in order to rescue not just Private Ryan, but the good name of war." Zinn also wrote, "Our culture is in deep trouble when a film like Saving Private Ryan can pass by like a military parade with nothing but a shower of confetti and hurrahs for its color and grandeur. My score? Absolutely nothing."
That was a review that surprised even me from Trace. I will admit, I'm a pacifist. I'm a big lefty and a guy who thinks that there is no good war. But I have to say, I give a pass for a good war movie. I hate the idea of a group of people being jingoistically forced into combat by a government that makes them think it's their patriotic chore. At the same time, every administration, every campaign, every war uses propaganda to get people to fight. And once in a while, like World War II, it's probably a fight worth having. So this is World War II movies have always been the ones where like, oh, let's watch the movie about the good war, not about Vietnam, not about World War One, not about you know, the horrors of trench warfare. Let's watch the movie about them trying to sock those Nazis, because I don't like those Nazis.
My friend
Indiana Jones fights those Nazis, and I like to see other people do it. I think making
a movie about whatever you want to call it, the good war, just gives license for more war. You know, it does. Yes, perhaps World War II was a war that needed to be fought, but I think that making it this heroic thing in a $70 million budget movie just gives us license to say, well, you know, we probably will need to again.
I think the shameful thing about World War II is that there were bombs landing on the streets of London and France for 3-4 years, and we sat on our hands and did nothing, didn't offer any kind of aid until Pearl Harbor, and then all of a sudden it was our fight too.
No, that's historically inaccurate. We did the lend-lease, and we did have training going on, and we did have the Chinese Air Force thing happening. So there's quite a bit that we did. We just weren't formally at war with anybody. That's true.
I see.
Quite a lot of involvement before that.
We didn't have GIs putting skin in the game until it was our fight. This is not a political podcast. We're talking about a movie, and I appreciate movies that have a strong anti-war message. I think this movie, when it was listening to its better angels, had a very anti-war feeling. I appreciated the fact that Tom Hanks's character in this movie was not a Sergeant Rock. He was not an incredible war hawk or hero. He was a school teacher from the Midwest who found himself in this situation and plotted forward, even on a mission he did not believe in. I always give points to any movie that does two things: that captures historic detail well, and has a lot of old-timey costumes, and is well made. And so this movie ticked those boxes for me. It is. I've watched a million World War II movies. I've watched movies like the Dirty Dozen and
there's hundreds of them, yeah.
And Force 10 from Navarone, the movies I grew up on about the Second World War, and this is the one that I thought like, oh, they're actually showing the horror of war. They're actually showing people losing limbs and losing loved ones, and the terror in the eyes of the civilians caught in the middle of it. And I also thought, for such a long movie, it carried its story forward in a compelling way. I think that framing the story with Harve Presnell, great actor Harve Presnell's reading of the famous Bixby letter by Abraham Lincoln about sort of the motivation for this mission of bringing at least one family member home to the Ryan's mother, I found it believable. I don't think it's based on anything other than clever screenwriting. This is not a movie like Schindler's List where Steven Spielberg is trying to show us an actual historical drama or give us some insight into somebody who was an unrecognized hero in World War II. It's just a war movie. And I think there have been war movies for good or ill as long as there have been movies. And the performances, the actors, the acting, the nuance of this movie, I found it moving at times and compelling and I got a lot more than no hankies for this one.
I agree, and I think
even as big of a bedwetting liberal anti-war person as I am, I do like a riveting movie. So I'll give it that.
I thought it was great. I thought it was a really good movie, very solid. I definitely disagree with the zero hanky rank. I mean, and I don't think it was in any way purporting war as being a positive thing, or let's do this again. It was the first movie I ever saw. Second, that's not true. The first movie I ever saw, and this was said, we didn't talk about this when we did Forrest Gump, but Forrest Gump, Vietnam veterans said that was the first time they saw a realistic what it was like to be in a firefight in Vietnam, because you never saw the enemy. And in that movie, that was the first time, one of the first times ever, I think the first time that a Vietnam movie was made where you never saw Charlie. And so, and the vet said that was amazing. I remember watching, we didn't talk about this when we did this movie, but I remember watching that and thinking, that's horrifying. That looks very real. And when I saw Saving Private Ryan, I grew up learning about D-Day and all the stuff, and you hear about it all and read it and watched some, like you said, some older movies. This was the first time I got what it was like for the people in it. And I was very emotional about the whole experience. And when he goes to after they've taken the beach and he goes into the officer's camp area, and you still that little shot of seeing them pouring hot coffee and the bread sandwiches and things. And he's looking at that thinking, we don't know what he's thinking, but you're thinking, these are like basics of life, and none of his soldiers have that, and so many of them are dead, and they have to do C rations and then go out and do more of this stuff. I don't know. Just I found so many moments in the film captivating. I did not think it was in any way a let's go kill Nazis. It was because you got to see some of the Nazis in it, and you got to see a little tiny bit of their side of it. Later on, Tom Hanks does the Band of Brothers series, which is one I think is also amazing, taught me a lot about what it was like for the guys in World War II. I think okay, I'm not a warmonger guy at all. I'm also a peace guy, but you got to understand war and know what happened. You can't just forget it and say that was a bad thing. You have to know what happened. And Band of Brothers did that too. It showed what it was like.
All Quiet on the Western Front is the gold standard for understanding war. The original.
Fair enough.
I haven't seen the remake, but the original.
Fair enough. But that's World War I, and I agree. But that should be seen. It happened. These people died. They did it. They were thinking that. We can judge them now, whatever we want, about signing up for a war you don't believe in or whatever. But they did it. So let's look at the history of what it was. And I thought this movie did an amazing job of what these guys went through and how stupid so much of it was and how wrong the Americans were in some places and how you're human. Remember when they're counting, they're looking through the dog tags. Maybe, hey, look at this poor bastard and this guy. And they're like, guys, the whole 101st Airborne is walking in front of you. These are all their buddies. These were Americans, you know, not paying attention. But I don't know. I don't think it was in any way glorifying anything.
I did like, I thought there was an undertone that the guys who seemed to be really dedicated soldiers and really showing what you would describe as the heroics of warfare, those guys all died. And the characters, yeah, like Jeremy Davies, who was terrified and showed that he was a coward in the face of war, he lived. He had compassion and respect for, he was gripped with the terror of war and stood in a stairwell
while his friends died
because that's what
you're human, what
some human can do,
and the opposite, and then it shows the other side too, what also the other side is of great heroics of people you don't expect. And I thought that was amazing. And then the big tough guy from Brooklyn who says, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not following you. And then, I don't know. I just thought it was all very well done. Yes, there's some screenwriting, but man, I thought it was a fantastic job.
For me. we're never going to agree on World War II. So let's talk about the acting in this movie. I would have said 10 years ago that this is probably the only time when you'd ever see Tom Hanks and Vin Diesel in a movie together.
This is my maiden Vin Diesel voyage. First movie. What? I ever, yeah. Very, very first. He's fine, but I didn't know. I thought he was just an action guy.
Yeah.
I didn't know he had ever made any, you know, real movie.
I would have said that 10 years ago that this would be the only time their acting careers would ever cross. But now in 2023, when the only way to get a major motion picture made is it either has to be a Marvel movie or a Fast and the Furious sequel. Those are the only big budget movies being made anymore. And as the Fast and the Furious films go, they keep adding people like Charlize Theron and Helen Mirren. So it seems like those are the only movies that can actually afford to pay. So,
Kent, I don't mean to fact check you. And the last thing I would ever do is defend, you know, the big Hollywood studios. But does Vin Diesel play Barbie?
No, but yeah, he's essentially the male Barbie. Yeah, he is. and Barbie is not. That's not original content. This is the fact that a major
Marvel
studio
is original content.
No. I'm saying that Marvel's not Marvel. All there are Marvel sequels. All there are Mission Impossible sequels. Are there the only other movies being made are Fast and the Furious sequels.
There will be Barbie sequels.
Well, but or stuff that was purchased when a studio bought Mattel. There has been a Battleship movie. There has been like every Mattel product has now become a movie, and finally they got around to Barbie. These aren't original screenplays being written by great screenwriters. These people saying like, hey, we own the rights to Transformers, so let's write us four movies because we bought Mattel, and so give us a Barbie movie.
But isn't this old news? I mean, isn't this been happening in Hollywood forever? I mean,
it is. But what I'm saying now is, I would expect in the next 5 years to see Tom Hanks be on screen with Vin Diesel a couple of times because it's the Vin Diesel universe now.
Now I have some good news. I have some good news that. This is the first of two movies in which Tom Hanks appears with Harv Presnell.
Which one was he?
He was the one who read the letter.
He's the one who sent them on the mission. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And he is
best known for playing the dad, the grumpy dad in Fargo. But he also had a career as a musical theater actor on Broadway and in the movie version of The Unsinkable Molly Brown. And then he walked away from acting and performing for decades. And
20 years.
Yeah, reemerged in the 90s with Fargo and then made a whole bunch of movies until he died, around 15 years ago or so.
So what was the other? You said this was two times he was on?
Yeah, he's in, what's it called?
It's probably a Tom Hanks movie.
It's that one with Tom Hanks. Where he plays a guy, you know.
Okay.
Just a second.
So
this is our film critic looking it up for
you. I think that's Tom Hanks playing a guy. I think it's either Splash or Cloud Atlas. I think those are the only two where he plays a guy.
Okay. It is Evan Almighty.
Evan Almighty. That's
not Tom Hanks. That's
yeah.
That's,
I think that's Steve Carell.
Jim Carrey
is Bruce Almighty.
It's on his list. It's on the list. And Wikipedia is never wrong.
No, I did notice on the Wikipedia listing for Saving Private Ryan that actress Olivia Munn is listed among the cast members of this movie. And first of all, there's no female cast members of this movie.
Unless
one of the fat secretaries at who
has the letters.
Reads letters.
His mother was in it.
Yeah, she falls down with her back turned on the porch as the cars pull up. But Olivia Munn, who is a super hot actress who shows up on the Wikipedia page for this movie is not in this movie. First of all, she was 13 years old when this movie was made, and she's not one of the 13-year-old French girls screaming like "Hand me back to my mommy" or so. It's It's a complete misnomer. Olivia Munn, shame on you for claiming to be in Saving Private Ryan. I'm sure you went and saw it against your will.
Maybe she's playing Gus Grissom playing a donut dolly.
There you go. Who stood out to you in the cast? It was a very big, very weird cast. People like Paul Giamatti, who you don't think of him as in a war movie
for him. But yeah, I mean, he went on to you know, be a major
film star. I thought Ted Danson was a weird choice.
Terrible choice.
Which you mentioned.
Totally.
He was a bad choice.
I think Spielberg was trying to show you that, like, no, this was everybody signed up for this war, and all kinds of types.
You talked about Vin Diesel. I think they actually had signed Vin Scully. But there was some sort of clerical error at the studio.
No, I thought Vin Diesel in this movie was actually fine. I think his performance was fine. I think that Adam Goldberg's performance was good. I think what's his name? Who's second or third billed?
Tom Sizemore.
Well, Tom Sizemore, who just recently passed away. I think he did great work in this. I thought Tom Sizemore was very believable. I thought your Brooklyn-born guy, who is a New York indie filmmaker, what's his name? Ed Burns, who was kind of when I was living in New York in the early 90s, Ed Burns was kind of seen as the white Irish Spike Lee. He was a filmmaker who made small, like Brooklyn-based or Queens-based movies about growing up Irish in New York City. And to see this guy who is kind of an auteur, kind of a writer-director, just be in an acting role in this movie, and he actually was pretty good. I will say that since almost everybody spends this whole movie speaking in military jargon, and just in this sort of like coded war speech, there is very little chance to act. It's a lot about memorizing lines and doing action sequences. I will say there is a scene where Matt Damon is reminiscing about his brothers, and he is genuinely human. He's talking about his brothers all...
Yeah, the last night
they saw each other, and I thought that was a really good little moment of performance by Matt Damon. I thought he is laughing and almost crying, thinking about his family, and I thought it was a great little scene, a great showcase.
I thought there were a few of those. I thought the one where the guy talked about, you know, how he pretended to be asleep when his mom came home.
Yeah,
that was a great little.
This is honestly the best performance that Giovanni Ribisi has ever had in a Tom Hanks movie, because we saw him break his arm and get kicked out of the band in That Thing You Do.
And speaking of damaged arms, this is the second consecutive movie featuring Bryan Cranston, a pre-stardom Bryan Cranston, who had a tiny role. As
Gus Grissom
in That Thing You Do, and then he's plays a one-armed gentleman in this.
A one-armed colonel in this movie. I thought
and
the
also Danny Farina's.
Danny Farina, mostly known for playing mobsters, and he plays pretty reasonable colonel in this movie. It's one scene, and they're drinking coffee and eating sandwiches and sending Tom Hanks out to this movie. I liked very much that Tom Hanks was not a traditional military hero, that he was closed off from his troops. He was unapproachable. None of them knew his backstory. He was a regular guy forced into this job, and he was a guy who thought all the time about the number of people who died under his command, died based on the decisions that he made, and would not get to know even the guys he'd been in combat with for a couple of years. These guys didn't know what his hometown was. They didn't know what he did for a living. They didn't know his wife's name. And I thought that was an interesting choice. And I don't know. I think Tom Hanks did really, really good work in this movie, even down to the physical work of I thought his right hand tremor, his PTSD tremor, looked really legit. It looked like he had a hand that was doing things he didn't know what it was doing. So anyway, summing it up, Saving Private Ryan, if you have any interest in a movie that shows people fighting in a war, you'll love this movie. If war is so abhorrent to you that you don't think it needs to be depicted on screen, then don't watch it. Because I too find the idea of war disgusting. I can separate myself enough to kind of watch a human drama unfold, and I think that's what this movie is rooted in. It's a story about some people very grudgingly doing their job, trying to help a person. I will say that I think, like A League of Their Own, the framing device takes away from this movie. I didn't need to see old man at the beginning. I didn't need to see the apology at the tombstone at the end. I mean, it was not as long
as the framing device in A League of Their Own, but you would think they would have learned from that.
It still felt like unnecessary padding. You know, if you watch The Dirty Dozen, if you watch Force 10 from Navarone, if you watch The Big Red One, these are movies that show as authentically as they can a slice of World War II as a piece of history, and you don't need to frame it in this larger context of how these people feel about it. And I think that it lifts it a little bit out of real life. If you asked any of us at 75 years old how we really felt about something we did in our 20s,
That's not comparable. None of us in our 20s went through anything like that.
But we went through our 20s.
Yeah, but it was nothing like that.
No, but life is something that you live day by day. And I think if you want to show the passion these guys went through in the war, that's one thing. I don't think we need to interview them about it 60 years later.
This is part of what I'm saying about what I think the movie kind of excuses war is that framing device. I think that's kind of put it in there to kind of make it appeal to more people.
I felt that Matt Damon was a good soldier and was trying his very, very best to do the right thing and save lives. And I thought he was trying to do everything right in 1942. I didn't need him to turn to his wife in 1988 and say, "Was I a good man? Did I live a good life?" To me, that cheapens what he went through there. Because I don't want to know. I don't want to turn to my wife in 60 years and say, "Hey, when I took that job at this place, should have I done that?"
But that's different than I've killed 75 people and I've had 10 guys die for me so I could have this life.
Right.
Very different than me taking that job at the supermarket. Was that the right choice? That's very different.
It is very different. I agree. But I don't think it made the movie any stronger. A few years later, Steven Spielberg would make a movie about Oscar Schindler. And that movie starts with a framing device showing the actual Jews that Schindler saved going and putting a rock on his tombstone as a tribute to him. I think that works because it is a true story and it is offering you the context of these are actual individuals. And he didn't cast actors. He cast Schindler's actual Jews.
So your only complaint with this movie is that it's imaginary. It's not that the sentiment is there. But the fact that it was made up.
No. My complaint is that I don't think it strengthens the story.
Right.
Whereas I think that in Schindler's List it does, because you're saying like these are these flesh and blood people that would not be here if Oscar Schindler hadn't saved them. It's not. Yeah, the movie veers in its framing device into documentary in Schindler's List, whereas in this movie it veers into sentimentality. And so I would say it would be a stronger movie without that frame, because it's a great war movie. It's a great story of people somewhere where they do not want to be. I love that the slow realization for Jeremy Davis's character of what FUBAR means, that it's not a German word. It means they're all existing in a situation that is effed up beyond all recognition, and they all just have to live with it every day. So anyway, that is our review of Saving Private Ryan. What can you tell me, Kevin, about the music in this movie? It seemed to be an intricately scored movie. It has just lots and lots of battle noise, but there is a lot of music in it. And I want to say that I appreciate any movie that, in context, has a script that can get away with somebody spending 3 minutes describing what an Edith Piaf song is about. And they find a way to have the guys all there listening to a Victrola playing an Edith Piaf song, and Jeremy Davis kind of translates it for them. I thought that was an incredibly transcendent moment in this movie. What did you think musically about the film?
You said it. I agree. That's you and Trace are getting really good at covering all the music. This movie was great because it was a John Williams score again, which he's just so his scores are always pretty on point and rarely distracting. They always are really good. And I thought the music was placed well. I thought all the silences were equally placed well. There were so many places they could have ruined something with music, and they left it quiet. And so then when the music came in, when you said, "Wow, this was a lot of good music in this," I think you notice it because it's not everywhere. There's two Edith Piaf songs and a Duke Ellington song, or the Ellington song, are the only ones in the movie. And again, the two Edith Piaf songs were well placed, and very few people know who, know who Edith Piaf was. But those who do, she was a massive force during that time, and for many years later. So those were well. And so I don't know. I thought it was clean, neat, nicely done musically.
Well, as my friend Forrest Gump says, that's all I have to say about that.
That is all I have to say about that.
And Forrest Gump's not my friend. So I'll also say
that. This movie is better than Forrest Gump.
It is better than Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump got half a hanky. This one got absolutely nothing from you.
Forrest Gump got something. Like an empty box of chocolates or something.
Well, but really important that everybody needs to appreciate is that Trace likes The Money Pit better than this movie. The Money Pit is doing well.
Wow, it moves up in Hank's ranks.
I knew I was going to have to go into therapy from doing this show. Oh, my God.
All right, well.
Trace likes The Money Pit. Trace likes The Money Pit.
I'll tell you what we all like. We all like when we go to either our laptop or our mailbox, and we open up that flap and we've got mail. We all love it when we've got mail. And next week we all get to experience the joy of getting mail. Next week we're going to be talking about a little movie in the romantic comedy genre called You've Got Mail. If any of our listeners are old enough to have had AOL in its first few years, you know that an exciting thing that you heard when you logged on to America Online every day is if you had any emails, a friendly little voice said, "You've got mail." And then a few years later, it started saying, "You've got SARS," and it wasn't as exciting. But But that
and
will
Paul
be
Lind rolled over in his grave.
That will be our movie for next week. But as always, we like to leave you dancing in the streets. And so here's a little song that we've composed to honor the veterans. No, it's a movie about Saving Private Ryan.
I got confused, unfortunately, and this song, I actually wrote a song about Schindler's List, and so I got confused.
That's actually
what the song is going to be. Is about.
At least you didn't write it about Shaving Ryan's Privates, which came out the same year. It's a very different movie, but also an incredibly moving personal story. Here's a song, folks. We'll see you next time on, what's the name of the show? On Hanks a Lot. I've been your host, Kent, and for Kevin and Trace, we wish you a great week, and we'll see you next time. Enjoy.
Save him, you gotta save that Private Ryan. Close to the beach and lots of blood, the letters of the dead and the Lincoln letter. Captain, if your mother saw you do that, she'd be very upset. I thought you were my mother. Learn how to gripe, always up, never down. Every man that dies saves 10 or 20 more. Ryan had better be worth it. Save him, you gotta save that Private Ryan. Save that Private Ryan. You gotta save that Private Ryan.
This has been another episode of Hanks a Lot, the Tom Hanks podcast. We're recorded at Cliffside Studios in beautiful Spokane, Washington. Your hosts for the show have been me, Kent Shelton, Trace Oakley in Hollywood, California, and Kevin Dennis in Seattle. If you have thoughts or comments about our show, or thoughts or comments about the films of Tom Hanks, please reach out to us at hankspodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word, hankspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends about our show, or rate and review us on your favorite podcast catcher. Come back next week, bring your sister, and we'll see you for another episode of Hanks a Lot. Goodbye now.